Welcome to Stories from the Heart. I'm your host, Sandra McDevitt. Today on Stories from the Heart, a bit of a mystery about an alibi of a young man who claims to have spent the evening of his cousin's demise in the presence of an elderly woman. The search for the woman comes to naught until a coincidence, or is it a God incidence, brings the woman to the town. Stay tuned to today's story, The Alibi, on another Stories from the Heart. Church. Mrs. Nesbitt, the landlady of the One Hotel of Newton, ejaculated, with an undertone of triumph in her voice. There is not a Catholic church in all of Newton. Oh, said Margaret Blake, in dismay. And this is a Feast of All Saints. Indeed. Mrs. Nesbitt's manner lost some of its deference. I suppose you mean today is a holiday with the Papists. Very probably, the landlady would have used another word had Miss Blake's attire been more costly. As it was, she had valued her visitor's navy blue costume and plain straw hat at only a trifle below their original cost. Yes, Miss Blake said quietly, today is a holiday with Catholics. There isn't a Catholic in Newton except a few laborers and servants, Mrs. Nesbitt remarked with a hard laugh, so a church is not needed. What will you have for dinner, miss? You'll get no train back from Belfast till 4 o'clock. Yes, I know, Miss Blake answered and proceeded to order a not luxurious dinner. Oh, dear, she said wearily when the landlady had retired. What a dreadful woman. And what provoking railway arrangements. Only one train today from Belfast, and that in the early morning, so I may have to wait 5 hours for my interview with Miss Bloomfield. And actually nothing may come of it. When Margaret Blake was compelled, 20 years previously, to set about earning her own livelihood, she was by no means well fitted for the task. Her education had not been thorough, so that her efforts to obtain a situation as governess had not been very successful. Two or three matrons had engaged her at different periods to instruct their offspring, but as a teacher, Margaret was certainly a failure. Other careers she had tried, and with the same result. Finally, she became a sort of nurse and companion to a certain wealthy English lady of keen insight and hasty temper. And for 10 years, the two women got along, well, not too badly. A few months previously, Miss Welland died suddenly. She had made no will, and a crowd of relatives long held at arm's length swooped down on Welland Hall. Margaret was discharged. All her efforts to find new employment had been unavailing. An advertisement in the Ulster paper had induced her to enter into correspondence with a certain Miss Bloomfield, who wished to find a suitable elderly person to attend a weak-minded niece. The lady desired a personal interview, and Margaret had journeyed glad at heart for the sight of her own land to Newton. She was staring gloomily at a loudly colored print of King William crossing the Boyne, when a bright-eyed, very dirty-looking girl entered the room without any undue ceremony. She closed the door cautiously behind her. "The mistress is outside, talking to a neighbor," the girl said, "and I slipped in. I heard part of the talk about you. Sure, if you want to go to Mass, you have only to go along the road there till you come to Earl's Court Lodge. Turn in and go up to the big house. Mr. Bellow is the Catholic, thank God. Everyone's free to go to Mass in the castle chapel. That's as true as my name is Biddy Malone." "Oh, thank you, Biddy," Miss Blake said. "Is it far from Earl's Court?" "Far, no, not more than 2 or 3 miles or so. You'll get there in time if you hurry. Mass is at 11, and it is now just after 9. Miss Blake hesitated. She was tired already. She had passed a sleepless night and started on a journey fortified only by a frugal breakfast of bread and tea. Biddy noted the hesitation. "Surely you'll be better in the open air than sitting here. It's a fine dry day, and you'll have a good road under your foot the whole way," Biddy said. "And you'd get sick of looking at Billy, the old orange heathen." The girl pointed a blackened forefinger at the Dutchman, King William. With such encouragement, Miss Blake set forth. Biddy accompanied her to the door and, in spite of her mistress's hasty descent on her, gave voluble directions as to the path Miss Blake was to take. Her rate of progression was probably much less than Biddy's would have been. When, hot and wearied, she reached Earl's Court, she found the priest reciting the creed. Only a few persons were present at Mass, and Miss Blake made her way quietly to a seat. Suddenly, the altar and priest seemed to reel before her sight, and she sank down in unconsciousness. When she recovered, Mass was ended, and only a couple of women remained of the small congregation. "How are you now?" asked one pleasantly. "You fainted." Miss Blake tried to rise. "I suppose so," she said confusedly. "I walked quickly, and I'm not used to doing so." "Just so. I'm the housekeeper. None of the family are at home, but if you come with me, you can have some tea or wine and rest," the woman said. "Oh, no, thank you," Miss Blake answered quickly. "I have an appointment in Newton at 2:00. "Oh, that's a long time off," the housekeeper rejoined, and whispered a word or two to her companion, who retired. "Now, come to my room and rest a little." Miss Blake yielded. She still felt weak and ill, and the miles to Newton seemed to lengthen. As she bent before the altar, she gave a little exclamation. "I wondered why the church seemed oddly familiar," she said a minute later. "Now I know. I saw a photograph of it." "It is considered a very perfect little chapel. Mr. Bella was very proud of it." "He should be," Miss Blake paused and added. "It was during the summer I saw the photograph." Margaret Blake was naturally a reticent person, yet noticing that she and the housekeeper were alone, she said, "The whole affair was rather curious. I'd been upset by the death of my mistress, and I had gone to a lonely little seaside place on the east coast of England named Carlton." "Carlton?" the housekeeper repeated with some interest. "Yes. The doctor had advised me to be out as much as possible, and I put his advice into practice. Well, one evening I had wandered further than usual along the coast. There was an old castle on a rock jutting out to sea. The entrance to it was easily effected, and I sat down to rest. I fell asleep. When I woke, the sun had gone down." Miss Blake paused and raised her hand to her head. "I feel a little giddy still," she said with a little laugh. "When you woke," the housekeeper reminded her of her story. "But sit down. My name is Nugent, Mrs. Nugent." "And mine, Margaret Blake." "Please forgive me, but go on. I will tell you in a moment why I am so interested," Mrs. Nugent urged. "Yes. Well, I was not alone in the castle. A young gentleman was there also. He informed me he had been taking a series of views of the ruins. They had some historical interest." "Yes, yes." "He was so engrossed in his work that he did not notice the rising tide. Well, he and I were kept prisoners there until sunrise." "Who was he?" "He did not tell me his name, but he showed me some photos he had taken at different times, and among them two or three of the interior of this particular church." "Oh, thank God, his ways are wonderful." Mrs. Nugent was evidently excited, and Miss Blake looked at her in surprise. "You don't understand, and I am keeping you here. Come." Mrs. Nugent led the way into a cozily furnished apartment and placed Miss Blake in a comfortable chair. In a few moments, she placed a photograph of a young man in her hands. Miss Blake exclaimed, "That's the gentleman. I left Carlton the next day." "You never heard, of course."
"Heard what?"
"I will tell you. The gentleman is Mr. Philip Chetwynd. He is engaged to Miss Nora, Mr. Bellow's second daughter, and at the time the engagement took place, everyone considered that Miss Nora was about to make a rather poor match of it. Mr. Chetwynd was a barrister, and not a prosperous one. He had been brought up to consider himself heir to a fine property near Carlton, but his uncle and he quarreled, and it was found the old gentleman had left his possessions to a cousin named Claiborne. In the event of Claiborne dying without children, the property was to revert to Mr. Chetwynd. Miss Blake nodded as the narrator paused for breath. From all accounts, Mr. Claiborne was not very steady. He was often found at the village inn, and one morning he was discovered lying dead at the foot of a cliff, over which he had fallen on his way home. Mr. Chetwynd had been in the neighborhood, unfortunately. Worse still, he had been out alone on that particular night. At the inquest, he was returned for trial. He told about being surprised by the tide and passing it the night in some old building. Very few believed the story. Do you remember the date, Miss Blake? Perfectly. The 15th of July. Exactly. Oh, is this not wonderful? Miss Nora will be happy now. She stuck to her engagement through it all. God bless her. The first trial was postponed. You were looked for. Where is Mr. Chetwynd? In jail. Oh, no. I'm going to telegraph to the master, Mr. Bellow. He'll be home fast enough. And you stay here, Miss Blake, till he does come. Miss Blake protested and explained why she was a Newton. Miss Bloomfield, Mrs. Nugent said with infinite scorn. Why, you couldn't live with her at all. A saint out of heaven wouldn't please her. See her? Oh, yes, you can see her, and I suppose you ought. But you'll come back here. I'll drive in with you to Newton. So, when Miss Blake was rested and refreshed, the pair drove into the little town. Poor Mrs. Newton positively threatened to use physical force in order to keep Miss Blake beside her. And when the interview between the latter and Miss Bloomfield turned out unsatisfactory, she carried Miss Blake back in triumph to Earl's Court. Now, the lady's evidence was quite sufficient to free Philip Chetwynd from any suspicion of occasioning Mr. Claiborne's death. He and Nora Bellow were married quietly soon after his release, and Miss Blake is at present the housekeeper for the young couple at Carlton Towers. Thank you for joining us on Stories from the Heart. Today's story, The Alibi, was written by Margaret Rock from the book The Best Stories of the Foremost Catholic Authors. For a copy of my stories, email Sandra at AveMariaRadio.net. I'm Sandra McDevitt. May God bless the rest of your day.
Missed a show? Not sure if it came from Ave Maria Radio? Go to AveMariaRadio.net. A list of shows and hosts are there. And if you find the show you're looking for, you can hear the whole thing again by going through the Ave Maria Radio audio archives. For 2 years, we've recorded nearly every show from Ave Maria Radio. Just click on the audio archives message located at the center of our homepage. Now you even have more reasons to become a radioactive Catholic by going to AveMariaRadio.net.